Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like Eco Eye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Now here's a highlight from Coast to Coast AM on iHeartRadio.
And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Jeff Belanger with us, author, adventurer, podcaster, storyteller, and explorer of the unexplained. He's written at least more than a dozen books. He's the Emmy-nominated host, writer, and producer of the New England Legend series on PBS, the Amazon Prime also. He also hosts and produces a weekly New England Legends podcast, and he provides programs and lectures to audiences all over the planet. His latest work is called The Call of Kilimanjaro. Jeff, welcome to the program, my friend. How are you? How's the family?
George, good to be back with you. Thank you. It's I'm doing okay, you know, in these strange times. My family's okay. We all have our health, so, you know, we're very grateful.
I miss our live events, Jeffrey. I miss seeing you in the flesh and all the great meetings we've had and times like that. I miss those days.
So do I. So, George, I've been doing a ton of these Zoom programs for libraries and different organizations all over.
Yeah.
On the one hand, great, right, because there's you know, no travel involved and stuff like that, but it's just not the same as being able to look into people's eyes, shake their hands, meet them in person. I miss it so much.
I'm doing Zoom for the Ozark Martin UFO event next month, and then I'm doing Contact in the Desert in June. But you're right. There's nothing like people. You know,
right,
where you can
exactly
look at them in the eyes and make them laugh, make them cry, make them go, oh, no, he didn't say that.
Well, we do that. I know. Wait, but I think it's coming around. I do. I have this feeling. It just feels like we're getting there. And so I'm hopeful. But I'm an optimist.
Absolutely. I'm going to get into in the second half of the program tonight your Call of Kilimanjaro.
Great.
I can't believe you climbed that thing. How high up did you go?
19,341 feet. But who's counting?
Were you winded when you got up there?
There is very little oxygen up there. I was beyond winded. I was pretty much out of my head.
Oh, my God.
Struggling for every breath.
Did you have a oxygen tank or anything like that?
Our guides had one, but I was fortunate to not need it. We're only up there 10 minutes. You got to start making your way back down because the air is just so very thin. But it was just so life-changing. So life-changing, I wrote a book about it.
You sure did. It's called The Call of Kilimanjaro. And I got to tell you, the cover is fantastic.
Thank you. I'd love to take credit. Well, I did take the top photo of the mountain. That was me. But yeah, no, the publisher did a great job. And just, you know, it was such a visual experience in Tanzania. I took 1,600 photographs. I've spent 6 days getting to the top, 2 days getting back down. I felt like a pilgrim during a unique part of my life.
By the way, the print, this is a heavy, heavy book.
Yeah.
Physically heavy. You spared no expense getting these pages together.
No, it's full color. You know, has dozens of the photos that I took, and it was. I think that it had to be. You know, it was such a visual experience, and I wanted to be able to do my best to try to take people through it step by step. Because I'm not a mountain climber. This is my first big mountain, and so I'm not. I'm just sort of like the everyman when it comes to this. I just had a big dream about it, and it was just so empowering to do all this, and deeply spiritual. That part I didn't see coming.
We'll get into this mission and right at the half. It's an amazing trip. Now, you're still podcasting, are you not?
Sir. Yeah, every week. Haven't missed a week, even during COVID.
Having fun?
Yeah, it's you know, I love getting these stories that I know people consider from the fringe, but doesn't feel so fringy anymore, does it? You know, talking about UFOs and monsters and ghosts and haunts and all these other things. It just feels, and I mean, Coast to Coast has played a huge role in that, you know, as far as making it accessible and making it something that we can talk about. And so it just feels like more people are willing to share those stories, which is what humans have done since we walked out of Africa all those many millennia ago, right? We share stories with each other, and that's how we bond. That's how we learn and grow. And so, just gathering the strange tales. And of course, we learn, too, that history has a way of repeating. And whatever we're in, we've been here before. So I know during COVID, I've been doing a lot of stories on New England vampires.
Ooh.
Because vampires, of course, were related to consumption victims, another plague that has killed. By the way, consumption, or tuberculosis, as we know it better today, has taken 1 billion, that's with a B, billion lives between the year 1800 and the year 2000 worldwide. This is a huge global killer. It still is in some countries. It's still a huge problem. And so during times of plagues, people get scared, which we're all too aware of. And sometimes they don't make rational decisions. And then we start to blame vampires, including exhuming bodies of suspected vampires, tearing their hearts out, burning them up, feeding the ashes to people that are sick with consumption in the hope to break the vampire spell. We've been telling these stories because it's kind of like, hey, this sounds eerily familiar, even though it was 200 years ago or 150 years ago. It doesn't sound too far off from where we are right now.
Oh, that's fantastic. These vampire stories are unbelievable, too, aren't they?
Well, so they've been around. You know, when we hear vampire now, we think about, you know, Bram Stoker, and we think about all the great movies that have come around in the last century. But long before vampires were sexy, alluring, or transformed into bats or anything like that, they were walking corpses who drained the vitality, the lifeblood of the living. And imagine someone you love is sick with tuberculosis, and you come in the morning to check on them in their beds, and there's blood on the corner of their mouth and on their chin and on their neck and nightclothes. And you say, oh my goodness, you know, they've been attacked by something. I mean, now we know, of course, they were coughing up their own blood as their lungs are literally being eaten alive by this virus. But you look at that and you hear stories of vampires and you see your loved one wasting away, and it's suddenly not too far of a leap to think that something is literally attacking them.
Well, last week, Ron Defoe died, the murderer of the Amityville Horror Stories.
Right.
Well, that was a bizarre program. You've looked a little bit at that story. Have you ever been to the house?
I've been in. So I went to Hofstra University in Long Island. That's where I went to college. And I remember my freshman year, you know, I was into this subject back then, too. And, you know, you're meeting people, and, oh, where are you from? And friends said, oh, Amityville. I said, no kidding. He said, yeah, you want to go see the house? I said, yes, I want to go see the house. So I've been in, I mean, I've never been inside, but I've been in front of it there on Ocean Avenue. It's been renumbered. Those famous windows are long gone, but when you stand in front of it, it's pretty obvious that's the house. And the thing about it is that, you know, six people were murdered in that house. That's not some made-up myth or legend. That happened.
That happened.
Yeah, right. I mean, this and by the murderer was their son slash brother. Absolutely gruesome. You know, and as interested in this subject as I am, I would never want to live in a house like that. You know, if you gave it to me for free, I wouldn't want to live in
no,
that house.
No, nor would I. There's too much horror there.
Yeah, no,
way
for sure.
Much.
Yeah, and so I was fortunate to get really one of the last interviews with George Lutz years ago, and this was about the time that the third Amityville movie had come out. And he and I talked for just hours about everything that he'd experienced in that house from first looking at it to moving in to moving out and then everything that transpired since. And I put it in one of my older books called Our Haunted Lives, this full interview. And I've since gotten a little bit friendly with one of his stepkids, with Christopher, and heard the story from his perspective. This just grips us, right? Because like you and I just said, like, hey, if you gave us that house, we don't want to live there.
Nope.
But they bought it, and they knew. They knew what they were buying, and it was fresh then. It was only, you know, the crime was only a year old when the Lutzes moved in. So this house has a power to it, and when you stand in front of it, I mean, I remember just looking at it, and you kind of gulp. You know, this is where something awful took place in this very nice upscale neighborhood where the houses are pretty close together. And they don't welcome people to gawk at this at all, which I understand. But at the same time, you know, some infamous history was made right there.
You're still doing paranormal shows for the Travel Channel, aren't you?
Yeah, so I'm still working on Ghost Adventures. Been the writer and researcher for 12 years, every episode. And then, but I've also been part of this new series of Shock Docs that they're doing on Travel and Discovery Plus. And those have been interesting because it's not so much paranormal investigation as like historical investigation, which is I love that. That's my favorite part, is to kind of pick apart how these things came together. And the Shock Docs are looking at some of the cases that made it into the popular culture, like Amityville, obviously. Well, you know, once it becomes a Hollywood movie and it's on everybody's minds, and then of course the story changes and evolves at breakneck speed. You know, then we're trying to get down to the roots of what actually happened.
Devil's Road, the story of Ed and Lorraine Warren. Did you ever meet them?
So I grew up in Sandy Hook, Connecticut. That's where I was. You know, did most of my growing up. And Ed and Lorraine Warren lived in the next town of Monroe. So I knew Ed and Lorraine since I was 12 years old. Went to the same church as Lorraine. Saw them in the grocery store. And back then, I mean, they were real local celebrities. You know, if you talked about a haunted house,
they were the go-to people, right?
Especially in Connecticut and New England area. You say, oh, it's haunted. You know, the Warrens investigated this place, and that was all you had to say, right? And so I remember being at their house and interview. That was one of my first big interviews when I was like 18 and writing for a local newspaper, was to interview them for Halloween. So I've seen their collection. I've been in their house. I've interviewed them at various locations, and so yeah, I got to know them over the years, and it's fascinating how they're seeing such a revival right now, posthumously. They've both passed away now, and because of the movies, because of the Conjuring movies that have become so famous and fun. I love those movies, but very little fact in them, of course. You know,
mm-hmm.
Great Hollywood fun, you know, jump scares and all the things you like in scary movies, but very little fact. And what's scary is some people view these movies and think that they are documentaries, not Hollywood films. And they're not. They're just, you know, they're fantastical, you know, roller coaster rides, but they are not based too heavily on fact. And so there's almost some setting the record straight work to do in some of these cases.
Will anybody ever replace them, Jeff?
Well, boy, everybody's trying every day, right?
I mean, they are.
So many. But you know what? Will anyone ever replace George Norrie? And the answer is no. There's one George Norrie. There's one Jeff Belanger. And you shouldn't. No one should even strive to be someone else. You should just strive to be yourself and put your own mark on the work that you do. And so anyone looking at them, like, sure, a husband and wife team. She was the psychic medium. Ed was this charming painter and storyteller. Ed could work a room. You know, did you meet him? Did you ever get to meet
never
him?
Never, no. Never met them.
Yeah, just never Ed. Met them. I remember being in high school, and they would hold these, around Halloween, of course, they would hold these programs where they would share some of their evidence and play just chilling audio, you know, audio messages and show you photographs and video clips. And you'd sit there, and Ed was just so charming, and Lorraine was like everyone's grandma, you know, just called everyone honey. And I remember being in their house, and this was before the internet, and their phone number was listed. You could just call Monroe and ask for their names, and you'd get their home phone. And all day long, the phone would just ring and ring, and Lorraine would answer it, and she'd, you know, you'd hear one side of it. Yes, honey. Oh, that sounds bad, honey. Oh, is there a Ouija board in the house? "Oh, you got to get rid of that, honey." And then she would hang up. And then that same conversation would just happen again and again, just people calling and calling. And they helped if they could. You know, they went to the homes that sounded really interesting, and they investigated and came at it from a very religious point of view, from a very Roman Catholic point of view. You know, Ed called himself a demonologist. He was looking for demons, not just run-of-the-mill ghosts. And I think that's something that set them apart pretty early on. It set them apart from, like, the Hans Holzers and the Brad Steigers of the world.
And you've touched a little bit on the exorcism with the individual who was exorcised, the little boy.
Yeah, the Exorcist book and movie. One of the shock docs was The Exorcism of Roland Doe. Roland Doe was the actual boy that went through an exorcism, Doe being the anonymous last name, like John Doe or Jane Doe. But this story is really interesting because it became the basis. William Peter Blatty used it as the basis for writing the book The Exorcist, and then, of course, later the movie. The real case is fascinating. You know, the boy was from Maryland, but went through all these exorcisms in St. Louis. And I've been to the house in St. Louis where he stayed.
Mm-hmm.
I've been into the museum there in St. Louis has the cross on display.
That's right.
And it's such an interesting museum. They've got so much fun stuff. And then right by, I think, an elevator, there's just this one cross with a little bitty sign that said, "This is the cross that hung outside the Alexian Brothers Hospital where Roland Doe went through some of his exorcisms." And that case, like when you hear about the actual real case, which, by the way, the movie has almost zero to do with it, other than this was an exorcism case that made it into the papers and inspired William Peter Blatty. But there's like strange stories, like the furniture from the room in the Alexian Brothers Hospital was kind of like quarantined after that exorcism, and then it went into storage, and then it went into storage at a nearby military base, and then it vanished. And just furniture, hospital beds, and things like that. Like, why should that matter at all? Who would care? Just destroy it. Throw it away if you're really afraid of it. But why keep it in storage and then to the point where it was lost? And now nobody knows where it was. I mean, my assumption is that it's probably some clerical thing where a room full of junk, and eventually no one asked about it for so long that someone did just dispose of it. But still, it became this mystery. Because I remember we tried to find it years ago. We were trying to hunt it down. Because this is a case that blew into something huge. It eventually became the basis for this wildly popular and still holds up frightening movie that scared us, you know, scared us about what things are lurking after innocent children.
What drives you pushing for the paranormal?
I guess I want my own answers. You know, I'm not out to prove anything to anyone in the world but me. I have big questions, just like everybody else. I was raised Catholic, and I can't escape that. That's my upbringing. And I think about the stuff I learned back then. And I think maybe because of my Catholic upbringing, you know, it occurred to me along the way. So with Catholics, we have God, and we have the devil. And we have angels, and we have demons. And we have sinners, and we have saints, and we have purgatory. I mean, that is a whole spectrum, right? You have everything in between is in there somewhere represented, and room for just about anything you can imagine in the paranormal, from my perspective anyway. And so I just kind of want to know, you know, how does it work? Is it really there? Are these feelings I have inside from me or from someone else? And then, you know, once you start looking into ghosts and you hear about the experiences of others and you have some of your own experiences, you start really, I don't know, I can't help it. I just want to delve in deeper and deeper. And I want to know, how come some things catch fire? Like Roland Doe's story. Why does his story catch fire and the tens of thousands of other exorcism stories are sort of kept quiet? You know, why do we talk about some buildings being so very haunted, and the ones right next door that are just as old or older, we don't. There's something in us, and call it some, you know, sixth sense that we all have, whether we acknowledge it or not, call it some tapping into some, you know, universal subconscious or something. I don't know, but I want to know, and I want to become part of those stories. I can't help it. You know, it's like if you hear about a really good restaurant, you're like, well, I want to go eat there. I want to find out what all the fuss is about. Or, you know, a fun roller coaster at a theme park. I want to ride it. I want to see if it's as scary as they say. We can't help it. We want to be the judge at the end of the day. And so I think that's a big part that just drives me. And then once you start having some of these experiences, and once I got a taste for it, and learning that there's just so many stories that make our communities unique and that connect us to each other and to our history, it's addicting. I've made some of the best friendships of my life. I've seen incredible places because of this work. And I think all of that because we're talking about something deeper than just, you know, the weather, you know, sports, politics, whatever. We're talking about like some really deep, really human experiences and issues. Important stuff.
Listen to more Coast to Coast AM every weeknight at 1 a.m. Eastern and go to coasttocoastam.com for more.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350 plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.